Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Pluto was in the headlines a few years ago when it was demoted from official planetary status to what many now refer to as a dwarf planet. Some still haven't accepted that demotion.
But regardless of where you come down on the debate, the recent pictures sent back from Pluto were breathtaking. It's the furthest place humans have ever sent a mission with such a close passby. Jean Creighton is our astronomy contributor, and she's with us to talk more about Pluto and what's next for our understanding of it. Jean, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Bonnie.
Pluto. We seem to always keep coming around to Pluto. There's always something new and something interesting, and this last month has been fantastic for Pluto.
Yes, it has. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what is going on? This is part of the New Horizons, right?
Mm-hmm. I want to say a little bit about New Horizons because, you know, now it's a household name. Everybody has seen the pictures. What a wild success. But I think this is more magnificent if you think about how hard it was to get New Horizons there in the first place. Starting from 1990, people had started proposing different missions to Pluto. And the reason for this is it's a time-sensitive thing. Pluto's distance from the sun changes over time. And if we wait too much longer, it's going to get so cold on Pluto that some of its atmosphere, maybe even all of it, is going to just freeze out. It's going to snow out its atmosphere to the ground. So scientists wanted to make sure that we get to see whether or not what kind of atmosphere Pluto could have if the temperature permitted it.
That's right, because Pluto has not a typical orbit. It's unusual, right?
It's very elliptical, yeah. So at its closest from the sun, it's closer than Neptune. And at its farthest, it's really out there. So there was a mission proposed in 1990 and 1991 and 1992 and 1993 and 94 and another one called Kuiper Express. These missions were all considered to be too big, too expensive, and yet apparently what's called the Pluto Underground. There was a group of scientists who really felt the urgency that we must get a spacecraft to Pluto. And they put together some ideas how to make this a very small, a very efficient mission. And that's when New Horizons came to be.
Just in time, right?
Just in time. Yes, they had a very narrow window of opportunity. And it was truly fortuitous that they basically built it on schedule with the budget they had, and they made that window to get to Pluto in time. Now, as you probably can imagine, there's no way that you can put enough gas in the tank to go straight from Earth to Pluto. There's just no way to do that. You have to use all the tricks that we have. The first big one, of course, is you have to have a nuclear little reactor on board. But you also have to use all the gravity assists that you can. So we sent New Horizons to fly by Jupiter. This is a trick we've done before. Jupiter has such a strong pull, if you will, that it can multiply your speed by a factor of five.
So it essentially flings you back out.
Flings you five times faster.
Okay.
This saves a lot of energy, of course. And if you get your positioning just right, and apparently, you know, they calculate what is the error bar at any given time in the mission that we can still get to within a few hundreds of miles from Pluto. They met that window exactly where Jupiter was concerned. So then you basically send off the craft. And the original idea was, we're going to check on this every month or so because it would be drifting through space for almost 9 years. After they tried it, I guess, a couple of times, that waking up process, because basically they would want to conserve as much energy as possible, they would shut it down and just keep life support going. And then they'd say, okay, wake up now and just to make sure that everything is working. Well, they found that that waking up process wasn't quite as smooth as they dreamt. So they realized, you know what, we better have more practice in waking up the spacecraft and talking to it. So that's how they got to more frequent calls, if you will, to the spacecraft.
They phoned home or they phoned out.
Yes. They definitely phoned out more often. So the window of opportunity, just to give you an idea of how accurately we understand orbital mechanics, how things move. The spacecraft arrived 86 seconds too early.
Wow. So, like, not quite a minute and a half.
Correct. Now, thankfully, the error bar they had was 400 seconds. So this was well within
tolerance.
You know, the tolerable. Yeah. Now, the reason why they had this small change was because, maybe you remember this, just before it approached Pluto, we lost contact with it. And the machine basically had two different, was confused, had two internal commands. They were incompatible, so it just decided, oh, I'm just going to shut down and wait until I get something, a better command. So in that time, it was completely drifting, and it was getting the little pressure from the sun. We call that solar wind. So just the photons that come from the sun and the particles give an ever so slight pressure to things in space, and that was sufficient for the few days that it remained out of contact to change its estimated arrival by that 86 seconds.
By a minute and a half.
Yeah.
You know, Amtrak should be so specific. Excuse me.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So anyway, one of the reasons why it was so hard to get a mission to Pluto was because people felt we could spend a whole lot of money to go to a place that's pretty boring. And why would you expect a place like Pluto to be boring? Well, it's so far from the sun. So it's a small world, so it's unlikely to have kept any of its internal heat. So it doesn't have a way of changing from within, like, say, Europa does, one of the moons of Jupiter. And it is such a small world, you would expect it to be very much like the moon. We didn't think it had much of an atmosphere, so it would have all these craters, an old, dead kind of place. Cold.
So why go?
Why go? Right. Yeah. We've seen stuff like that. What's to learn? So imagine our surprise when we found that it isn't as cratered as all that. There are many regions, the heart I'm sure you've seen, that are almost crater-free. So that tells us that there must be some mechanism with which it reorganizes itself on the top. So the trick about Pluto's temperature is it's so cold that water behaves completely differently. I mean, it is ice, but in certain times of the year, it'll be like granite. It's so hard. So there must be some mechanism, and we're not quite sure how, that whole flows of ice move. And if you look at the terrain carefully, you can almost see the movement. You can almost see a glacier kind of movement to it.
Interesting. Almost like it has its own tectonic activity.
Exactly. We also see these mountains. Now, Pluto is smaller than the distance between New York and Los Angeles. It fits in the continental U.S., and yet the mountains are as tall as the Rockies.
Interesting.
So again, there must be some mechanism to make that happen. Furthermore, there is a deep ridge that is four times the depth of the Grand Canyon. So this is an extraordinary world. It has an atmosphere, and indeed a tall atmosphere, about 1,000 kilometers. So that's about 600 miles tall. And you might have seen the fantastic images of a solar eclipse from the perspective of the spacecraft that's flown by Pluto, and you get to see Pluto's atmosphere as a result of that.
Almost haloed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Isn't that a magnificent picture?
It was a spectacular picture.
Yeah.
Is a spectacular picture.
It is indeed. So all these things are going to take us a while to figure out how a world that we thought was going to be cold and boring and just full of marks is in fact a rather dynamic, interesting, exciting, and might I add, beautiful world.
It surely is. And you know this is going to make the people who want to make it a planet again argue for that. You know that.
I'm not going there.
Okay. All right. I had to say it, though.
Okay. Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
So what happens to New Horizons? It's gone past, right?
It has. But, you know, it is hard. It's hard to get the data to us fast enough. So at this point, we still anticipate a year worth of images. So we are going to be learning about Pluto and understanding more about this world for probably years to come.
Will New Horizons keep working, or is that eventually going to die out in the depths of space?
Well, what we're hoping is going to happen is it's already been assigned its next target. So hopefully it'll get there. And as long as it doesn't hit something, which is unlikely, it should be fine. Eventually, it's just not going to have enough juice to send us a signal that we can still record. But we could be a long way away from that.
So we have lots to look forward to.
We have lots to look forward to.
Terrific. And as always, we have you to look forward to again next month. But Jean, as always, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Astronomy contributor Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee.